Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 10th of January. It's all things political for this Monday, and we, of course, will be spending most of this hour talking about the horrendous events in Tucson, Arizona over the weekend, which will have enormous consequences for people who are representatives, who are public servants, their safety, how Congress will respond this week. And just the horrors of all of these people, good people, being shot like this in a supermarket at a congressional event to meet people and talk to your congresswoman about your concerns. It is a horrendous story, and it is one that haunts, and we'll be talking about it this hour. I'm sure that many of you will like to speak to the issue as well. We will have two guests with us during the course of All Things Political today. Mara Liasson is joining us at the top of the hour, national political correspondent for National Public Radio. Dick Simpson will also join us, political science professor at the University of Illinois, Chicago. The big political story last week as we were planning this show was the appointment of Bill Daley to be Chief of Staff to President Obama, so we will mention that, but I would imagine most of you will want to talk about the events in Tucson, and we will be welcoming your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The latest news on Congresswoman Giffords is that she is holding her own. A neurosurgeon who operated on her said that she is responsive to commands, but mostly remains in a medically induced coma, and that she will likely remain in the intensive care unit for at least 1 week. Also, Jared Loughner here has not said a word to investigators. We'll be hearing more about him, of course, during the course of the day. Mara Liasson is the national political correspondent for NPR. You can hear her, of course, on All Things Considered and Morning Edition. She provides extensive coverage of politics and policy from Washington, focusing on the White House and Congress, and also reports on political trends beyond the Beltway. Our email address, if you'd like to use that today, is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Mara Liasson, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
What an absolutely horrendous weekend this
horrible,
has been. It just haunts you, doesn't it?
Just horrible, horrible, horrible.
Yeah, and all the people.
It's unspeakable.
Yeah, it is. And it's going to, in some way, change us. I'm not sure it will change Congress this week, but the young girl who was killed, who maybe would have been a future member of Congress, and all of her excitement being on the student council, it just makes you weep.
Oh, it's just horrendous. I mean, I was thinking back. I've been in Washington for 25 years. I cannot think of a time when a congressman has been assassinated, unless I am totally missing something. Many, many members of Congress have died, but this is just unspeakable and absolutely horrific in every way.
Yeah. You're in Washington. Tell me how people are responding in Washington. Are members of Congress, obviously, they're heartsick about this, but are they worried about their safety? Are they worried about conducting business?
Well, they're worried about their safety. They feel exactly the same as anybody does out in the country, just horrified. And some of them are talking about carrying guns to town meetings. There is talk about beefing up security for members of Congress, although how you protect 535 members of Congress in a way that would not impede their ability to interact with the public, which is one of the most important things they need to do, and meet with their constituents the way Gabrielle Giffords was doing when she was gunned down, is almost impossible. You can't put bulletproof glass between members of Congress and their constituents. There was a bipartisan teleconference with 800 members of Congress and their spouses over the weekend, which
really
is quite unheard of. I think it's unprecedented. And this has been a absolutely bipartisan response in Congress. There has been no partisan finger pointing, although, of course, there are the inevitable discussions of whether public discourse and certain kinds of rhetoric had anything to do with this. But I would say that the reaction of members of Congress is just as heartfelt as any person in the country, if not more so.
Mm-hmm. What's amazing about her and the federal judge as well, and is that she seemed to have been, and you probably knew her or know her, transcending bipartisan politics, that there was something about her warmth and her interest and her serving that was quite genuine, and people of all political persuasions responded to that.
Well, yes, and regardless of that, I think the response to any member of Congress, regardless of their style or level of partisanship, I think people would react the same way. However, it is true that she was really well-liked. She was a Republican-term Democrat. She was a centrist, so she was in the middle of the ideological spectrum. She was gracious. She was extremely energetic. She was considered a rising star in her party. She was the first Jewish female Congress member in her state delegation. and she was very, very well liked. She was not known as a bomb thrower. She was somebody who worked very hard on her issues. And when you look at her voting record, it's quite eclectic. She was strong on gun rights. She wanted to be able to ride her motorcycle without a helmet. She did not vote for Nancy Pelosi to be the minority leader when they came back to Congress after losing 63 seats in the midterms. On the other hand, she did vote for the president's health care bill, and she had a rock thrown in her office window after that vote. So she definitely had death threats, although she was smack in the middle of the political spectrum. She wasn't on either extreme, that is for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, Congress will respond by, what will they be doing this week? They're not going to have a debate about health care reform
No,
again.
No, they're postponing that. They're certainly going to pass some bills in honor of her. There's going to be plenty of memorials. There was a congressional staff person who lost his life. The flags in Washington are flying at half-staff because of that. There will be a moment of silence today. Congress will participate in that, and so will the president. So the regular order of the new Congress has definitely been put on hold for a week.
Mm-hmm. There is no doubt, and of course the conversation has already started, so I will enter that conversation, that the political debate in this country has really reached a fever peak here, that there have been comments made, and she even talked about being in the crosshairs of Sarah Palin's desire to get rid of certain members of Congress.
Well, literally, Sarah Palin posted a gun sight on her district, as she did on many other districts.
Yes.
Which, interestingly enough, one of her spokesmen called it a surveyor's symbol over the weekend, although Sarah Palin herself had described it as a bullseye.
Mm-hmm. And Congresswoman Giffords said that when people do that, they've got to realize there's consequences to that.
Yes, and we don't know if this was a direct consequence of that. I think everybody's trying to be very careful about that. This guy was definitely deranged, and what people are discussing is what is the connection between inflammatory rhetoric and individuals who are mentally unstable and who have easy access to guns. He was a legal gun owner. He bought his gun legally. I don't know what kind of mental health checks you have to have in Arizona to buy a gun. But there is definitely a discussion about political discourse, and I think there seems to be a consensus on both sides of the aisle that it would be a good idea to tone it down, regardless of whether there was any connection or not between political rhetoric and this incident.
And what about you as a reporter on the Hill, and you've been there for some time? Would you say that we need to tone it down, and the political climate has been not a good one, and it gets worse, or is it about what it's always been?
Well, I think that politics has always been a rough and tumble sport, very tough. I think that what we've heard and seen recently in terms of political rhetoric is not new. I think it's been gradually ascending or descending to this level for quite some time. For every person who says something horrible about Barack Obama, you can find a poster of George Bush with a Hitler mustache. So, I mean, the difference is, of course, is now because of the internet and blogs, everything is viral. You can hear everything immediately. Everyone has access to everything. But I do think there are certain things that should be beyond the pale, and people should think twice before they say them. Things like we have to take this person out, or this person should be on the firing line, mm-hmm. or calling people Nazis. I mean, you know, Nazis were people that we that America took up arms to defend themselves against. So I think that has no place in political discourse. But, you know, partisan, there's no doubt that politics has been getting more partisan. I just think that it would be a good idea to, for people individually to think about what's appropriate and what's not. And there, I would say that recently there have been a ratcheting up of military gun metaphors in politics. Now, I'm not saying that any of those, that kind of language was connected in any way to this person's actions, but the incident has sparked a discussion of that kind of rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. The Pima County Sheriff was all over TV, as you know, this weekend, and he said, and I think this is happening, it's time for the country to do a little soul searching. But he also said, which is sobering, the sad thing is what's going on in America, pretty soon we're not going to be able to find reasonable, decent people willing to subject themselves to serve in public office.
Well, I happen to know that there are many, many reasonable and decent people who are serving in public office. And they do so at tremendous sacrifice. And Gabrielle Giffords, her staff, made the ultimate sacrifice. And luckily she hasn't yet. And we certainly hope and pray for a full and speedy recovery. But I hope that doesn't happen. All I can say is it hasn't happened yet. There are many, many decent, reasonable people in politics.
Let's go to phone calls. Our lines are filled here. 800-486-8655 is our number. Mara Liasson, national political correspondent for NPR, is our guest the first half of All Things Political. Jim from Milwaukee, hello.
There are four key ideas that I want to at least touch base on. First, take a look at the book, The Political Mind by George Lakoff, especially Chapter 10, Aim Above the Bad Apples. Secondly, it's a system, stupid. Third, there's a double standard involved. And fourth, let's not forget about all the Republican potential Republican presidential candidates that didn't say anything about this before the situation happened. In Lakoff's book, the bad apple has two useful purposes. The bad apple is dealt with, and the organization is redeemed and keeps operating as before. And by using the bad apple, you can find a target in the organization to blame so that everybody else in the organization escapes blame. And the double standard is that, for example, Sharon Engel talked about Second Amendment remedies during her campaign in Nevada. But when all is said and done, Engel can still run for office and wasn't denied running for office at that point in time. And, of course, Sarah Palin can still run for office. Unlike Democrats who raise issues about 911, get kicked to the curb without just for asking the question, and they didn't even shout fire in a crowded theater. So I just ask the conservative listeners to name one conservative who's considering a run for president, from Jeb Bush to Ryan, any of them. Can you document any of them that said anything against Sharon Engel, that Sharon Engel was out of line and proposing a dangerous line of thought before this incident happened?
Mara?
Oh, well, off the top of my head, no. But that was something she said in a debate with Harry Reid, and she obviously didn't succeed in defeating him in the election. And no, I can't think off the top of my head of any of the Republican presidential candidates, potential or otherwise, who said anything about that Second Amendment remedy statement.
Let's talk more about guns, because this will happen eventually. We've had a lot of horrendous shootings and massive numbers of people die. Do you think that you were talking about, and we'll find out more the second hour of our show about guns, but not knowing exactly what the rules are for mental health checks in Arizona, do you think we're going to have another debate here about what kinds of guns we ought to buy? We postpone that debate and have for years and years, but this guy never should have been able to buy that kind of gun.
No, and first of all, I don't know if we're going to have another debate about gun control. Gun control is something that the Democratic Party decided not to push anymore.
Yes.
That decision was made several years ago. It was decided that it just wasn't a good issue for them. Now, I would assume that there is consensus on the left, on the right, and even, I assume, on the part of the NRA, that mentally unstable people should not own guns. And the particular circumstances of this individual's purchase, I don't know. But I would think that that's something that people could agree on.
We go to Richard next in Fort Atkinson. Hi, Richard.
Hello. Well, I think that some of the points made by the previous caller are probably quite correct. I would like to, however, extend those comments to the Democrats as well as the Republicans. The Democrats have been failing on almost all of these issues, especially as you've just mentioned, gun control. But the simple point is that nobody should be surprised that this sort of thing happened. This is an incredibly violent culture. Young people grow up on Grand Theft Auto and Call to Duty, Black Ops, and an incredibly intense, violent computer games. Arizona is located right on the front line of a war that is going on in Mexico, where most of the weapons are supplied from the United States because of our lax gun control laws. As the previous caller mentioned, the political rhetoric is poisonous. We are involved in violent wars around the world, and we have police officials like Officer Maserly in Oakland, California, who murdered Oscar Grant, getting off with minor sentences in the criminal justice system. Our whole culture is directed toward and involved with violence.
Mara.
Well, that certainly is the view, you know, of many people. I mean, I think I'd just leave the caller's statement as it stands. I mean, there is tremendous violence in our culture. That's true. And whether or not any of those influences affected this individual, remains to be determined.
We remember, I don't know who it is who can come forward at this point. Maybe you know, Mara, and guide us through this soul searching that needs to happen. I mean, certainly the country, and I lived through the 60s when we had assassinations of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy and John Kennedy and the civil rights movement where people died because of that. This country has been through horrendous times before, but we need to, I don't know how we conduct this soul searching, which obviously needs to happen. I was shocked by what happened on Saturday, and I know that violence can emerge, but somehow you got to believe this won't happen again, and we're going to do something so that this won't happen again.
Well, I don't know what we can do to make sure this doesn't happen again. I mean, you know, we talked about this at the beginning of the program. I can't think of a security regime that would both protect every member of Congress absolutely, kind of guarantee to protect them, without somehow hampering their ability to interact face-to-face with their constituents.
Yes.
But I do think that there are some practical things. I mean, first of all, the Congress is definitely undergoing a security review of what kinds of security it can and does provide to its members. Number two, you know, mentally unstable individuals should not be allowed to own firearms. I'm assuming that's something that we could have wide agreement on. And in general, although this is a little bit like the Supreme Court talked about pornography, you have to kind of know it when you have to know it when you see it, is people have to make judgments. Public figures have to make judgments and exercise good judgment about what kind of rhetoric is simply going too far. And I do think, you know, calling for the death of an opponent or likening an opponent to a Nazi or saying that somebody needs to be taken out or, you know, putting crosshairs on people's districts is probably not a good idea. Mm-hmm. Not because it's going to cause more of these incidents, just because it would be better for all of us, I think, to conduct our very very intense partisan differences in a more civilized way.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Dave in Menominee, Michigan. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning. You know, I wanted to bring up one of the heroes that was there to hold down the shooter. There was a woman there that I've seen on many interviews. And she said that she was there to talk to Ms. Giffords about the job-killing Obamacare bill, you know, and it's that type of language that really misleads people and stirs emotion and in some cases sets people off. I also wanted to bring up my congressman, Bart Stupak. He was so threatened. He was so afraid that in interviews now, he quit. He did not run again. And in interviews now, he says he wouldn't even walk his dog. He was so afraid. And this is just ramped up so high with a selection of words. You know, the wordmeisters are really want to get the emotion going. And it's going to work as long as we let it work. As long as this keeps working, they're not going to stop. So it's up to us to cast it aside. And that's the only way it's going to stop.
Mara?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, people have to hold their representatives accountable, and they have to hold them to the kinds of standards in public discourse that they want. Now, the number of death threats that members of Congress got after they voted for health care, according to reports, is on the rise. To threaten somebody with an assassination because of a vote on a piece of legislation is mind-boggling to me.
Yes, it is.
It's just mind-boggling. And I do think that, you know, these standards are set from the top. I'm not saying that members of Congress threatened each other, but I think that members of Congress can set a tone, and they can treat each other with civility despite their disagreements. And that would go a long way to fixing the kinds of things the caller is talking about.
And what about the press? What about the number of radio programs? And there are many of them in this country, and some are worse than others, that have this kind of rhetoric that really exists to get their numbers and get people riled up and mad. And it seems to increase ratings. But there is a lot of that right now. Do you do anything about that?
Well, I don't think you can. That's the First Amendment. I really don't think you can. yeah, I don't know what you can do to. You can't really enforce some kind of a speech code, but you can have people, prominent people, people who have a lot of credibility, speak out against that wherever it occurs. I'm not exactly sure what specifically you're referring to, but if somebody is on the radio calling for somebody to be killed, although I think there might be an FCC rule against that. I'm not too sure. But when you get into the more nuanced, just inflammatory rhetoric, I think it would be pretty hard to
right.
stop that.
And going back for a minute before we let you go to this teleconference, tell me more about that. What did they talk about at that teleconference?
Well, that was just talking to people about what they were going to do and the review that they were going to make. And it was basically an attempt by the new speaker, John Boehner, to condemn the act, be a calming presence, and reassure members of Congress.
Whoops. Hello? Okay. Well, we lost our connection with her, but we got the gist of what she was saying. All right. We're going to continue with all things political. We're changing guests. When we had booked this show, the big news, and we will touch on this, was the announcement of Bill Daley to be President Obama's chief of staff, and we scheduled somebody who's an expert in Chicago politics. But of course, the big news of the weekend is what's foremost on our minds right now. So we will ask our next guest about that, as well as Bill Daley a little bit down the line. We'll continue to take your phone calls. Dick Simpson, political science professor at the University of Illinois, Chicago, will be joining us momentarily. Our phone number is still 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, we will be talking with the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter who did this series that was recently in the Washington Post, and it deals with the influence of the NRA in this country. Joining us now, Professor Dick Simpson. He is the head of the Department of Political Science at the University of Illinois in Chicago. He's interested in Chicago politics, urban politics, election, state, and local politics. He's the author of a number of books, many, many, many books, and also has been involved politically himself. He was the alderman of the 44th Ward in Chicago from 71 to 79, a candidate for Congress in 92 and 94, served on the transition teams of Mayor Jane Byrne and Mayor Harold Washington, former president of the Illinois Political Science Association, and he joins us now to talk about what happened in Arizona. Of course, he will be discussing that because it's on our minds today, and we'll also be looking at the new chief of staff, who hails, of course, from Chicago. Professor Dick Simpson, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
We spent the first half hour with Mara Lyston talking about the events in Tucson. Let me ask you what you think needs to happen in terms of soul searching in this country now. We're pretty upset about this event.
Well, I think it's very important to learn to have the disagreements on public policy and fierce debate without labeling each side traitors or the like. There's a certain point of incivility which is not allowed in politics, even if you really vehemently oppose the other policies. You can disagree on policy without trying to stereotype or label your opponents.
Mm-hmm. It worries me because I saw the woman who's a member of Congress, very, very well liked, a role model for this 9-year-old girl who goes to see her because she's interested in politics. She's on the student council, and one has a severe brain injury and the other is dead. And it just sort of, what does it do for people's hopes for the future or for people who are in Congress who have to be worried about their safety now? It upsets the whole democratic process.
It does. One of the most important functions is to be able to meet with constituents and to represent their views at whatever level of government you serve at. It certainly was true when I was alderman, certainly is true of congressman and so forth. You really have to be able to meet constituents. Now, in fact, there have always been threats. When I ran for alderman, I received death threats, but it was around much more narrow. It wasn't such broad hate, had to do with a particular stand I had taken on a company that had a lot of ex-cons in it, and I received some death threats. But that's unusual. It's always happened, but it hasn't resulted in actual murders very often. And public officials have to be able to be in touch with constituents, and not just through electronic media.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that unbelievable, though, that you were an alderman and you received death threats for a stand you took? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, it's not totally unusual. Of course, there have been presidential assassinations before in the country, but this is a little different. This seems to be spreading to a much broader sense that anybody who holds the different political party or the different point of view should be eliminated rather than defeated by votes.
Mm-hmm. So what do we do about that? Does this event make everybody in Congress do a kind of soul-searching? People who are on the radio and on television be more careful about the language that they choose and the way they frame debates?
Yes, I'm rather fond of sort of the British tradition, and it's often been true in the past in the U.S. Senate, where you say things like, disagree with my esteemed colleagues. This is the most ridiculous, statement that's ever been made in human history. But, you can oppose what they say or what they do or what their policy is, but they still are your esteemed colleague, and they still are our representative. They represent all of us in the United States, whether we voted for them or like them or not.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. Maybe we should all be required, I disagree with my esteemed colleague.
Well, it's a polite format which reminds us that they got to this position because the people elected them.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to spend the second hour on this, and I know Chicago has dealt with gun control legislation, and then it's been changed in recent years. What about this issue of guns in our society, the easy access to really incredibly lethal weapons? And we're going to find out what the Arizona laws here, but everybody would agree that somebody like this should not have been able to purchase a gun.
That's correct, and certainly not the kind of automatic weapons that can now be purchased too freely. All of the legislation that it's fine to have hunters, as you do in Wisconsin, and you know, it's fine for them to have a shotgun or something to go duck hunting, but it is not fine for them to carry essentially pistol size automatic weapons. That's a danger in society. The states that allow concealed weapons, I view as incorrect. I think we do have to be more careful with laws that limit gun ownership and gun usage.
There were several members of Congress who said after this incident that they were going to arm themselves when they went to their constituent meetings. What do you think of that?
Well, of course, it won't work. It wouldn't have worked this time. You know, maybe they would have gotten the gunman, you know, two or three shots earlier or something, but it wouldn't have saved the congresswoman.
Mm-hmm. Let's move to what we thought would be the big story of the week,
yes,
and the weekend changed it, and that's the president's saying that Bill Daley from Chicago is going to be his chief of staff. What do you think of the appointment?
Well, on the whole, it's positive. Liberals have not been thrilled because Daley is very moderate, some would say conservative, but he does bring a wide range of expertise. He has been on the national stage before. He helped shepherd NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement, through Congress. He was Commerce Secretary. He not only headed his brother's first campaigns for mayor in Chicago, but headed Al Gore's campaign. He brings a certain expertise and skill and set of contacts, and coming from the business community probably helps the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm. We were speaking with Howard Fineman last week about this, and he was saying that if he picks, and it was the day that he picked Bill Daley, that it is an indication that he is really switched to a reelection mode, that he's not going to do anything to upset the apple cart when it comes to dealings with Wall Street and the financial community.
Well, he has switched to a reelection mode, but he still wants to get some things through. Which ones are still going to be viable in the new Congress with the new majorities is a little harder to tell. But Bill Daley is used to working in this sort of climate, as he did in the Clinton administration. And I see, you know, it's still going to be Obama who makes the decisions on policy. Bill Daley will have a bit of a gatekeeper function as to who gets to talk to the president. But in the end, Obama's going to dictate the policy. So if they want to try and move to, forward on some parts of the immigration policy, it'll be Obama who decides that and Daley who has to do it, even though their Congress is pretty unreceptive to a number of the campaign promises of the Obama presidency.
What does it mean for Daley to come to the White House from being on the top operating committee at J.P. Morgan Chase, this bank? He's obviously a member of that financial group that some have criticized as having way too much influence in Washington right now, that there are too many of those people who are members of the staff and not enough concerned for the little people, for consumers in this country. Is that fair criticism?
Well, it's fair criticism. You know, Daley does come from a political family. He does understand a bit the necessity, and he is, in that sense, a Democrat who wants to, you know, get the president reelected, and he wants to do things for the American people, believes in most parts of the Democratic Party platform. So he's not a plutocrat. He wasn't born rich, and he hasn't always had wealth. He has had it recently, last decade or so. But He hasn't entirely forgotten his roots as a Chicagoan.
What does that mean?
Well, he comes from a working-class neighborhood. His father was mayor.
Mm-hmm.
His brother eventually became mayor. But Bridgeport is a hardscrabble, working-class neighborhood. He knows the struggles families had during various periods of recession. So I don't think he's entirely left those roots, even though he may, be in situations with the bankers at this point, at the highest levels of commerce.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think the president, is there something about Chicago that made him choose Daley?
Yes. I think the easiest way to put it is an old phrase here and other places, politics ain't beanbag. We play hardball politics. Some of our politicians are not such literate folks in their writing or speaking, but they damn well know their numbers. They know how to count.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to get things done. They know how to run political programs. They know what will work and what won't work. They know how to shape real compromises, not sellouts. All of those, and it's a tough city. So we're not shy about if we have to fight for what we believe is right, we will. All of those characteristics are going to serve Obama rather well in this stage. And Obama has known Daley for some time. And, of course, Daley backed both Daleys, both Bill and his brother Richard M., backed Obama in the presidential campaign.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls, and let me give you the number once again. Our guest this part of All Things Political is Professor Dick Simpson. He is head of the Political Science Department at the University of Illinois, Chicago, and he's been a Chicago politician himself. He's been an alderman. He was also a candidate for Congress in the 90s, and he served on the transition teams of Mayor Jane Byrne and Mayor Harold Washington. We're talking with him about the appointment of Bill Daley to be Obama's chief of staff, but of course we all have top of mind what happened in Tucson too, so feel free to go in both directions or other directions. After all, it's All Things Political, so fill in the all. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And you may want to use our, we don't have any messages. If you want to send a message, you can do that. That's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. A couple lines are open for you right now. I'm Kathleen Dunn. I'm the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program, will be speaking with James Grimaldi, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter for The Washington Post. This series on the influence of the NRA was in The Washington Post prior to the events of the weekend, so they take on even more urgency now. I guess the basic question is, how is it that somebody could go to a shopping center in Tucson, somebody who's obviously got some serious mental illness going on, gravely wound a member of Congress, kill a federal judge, kill six people, actually, and wound 14 people. How does somebody like that get the kind of gun that he was able to purchase? It just seems as though it should be something that should never happen. We'll talk about that and about the influence of the NRA, which I know will spark a lot of phone calls the second hour of our program. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and let us go to Dave from Appleton for our first call for this half hour. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Merging the two topics, it seems like part of the anger out there, or maybe people coming out of the woodwork and expressing themselves, is due to the sort of the fact Republicans have sort of controlled the message and the anger. They, I think, and it's been whipped up by talk radio, etc. Is Daley going to be strong enough Does this signal a change where the Democrats are going to sort of take the message now and control the labeling and the language that has sort of permeated every topic? One or two words permeate a topic, and it's usually controlled by the right wing that can say death panels, that can say Obamacare and all these things, liberal, and all these words that all of a sudden become epithets in our society, but pretty much from the right. Is Daley good at this, at now doing it the other way, giving it back?
Well, the president has had people like David Axelrod with him during the whole period, and sometimes the president has been able to shape the debate. Daley will be good at a different level, which is the steady effort to get things done that keeps on no matter what the firestorms are in the airways or wherever they happen. I don't think Daley is much better spoken than his brother Richard M. Daley, but he's not a wordsmith. He's not going to be sloganeering so much, but he will take the fights that Obama decides to engage in and push them. I think one of the ones that will be, which is a little more low-key, is the whole question of economic recovery and jobs. I do expect the president to push forward a series of economic policies in the Congress and to try and make sure that the attempt to curb the deficit doesn't stop the economic recovery.
And do you expect some brand new policy in this regard, creation of jobs?
I do. There's a middle ground which has only been partly explored by Congress so far in terms of laws passed, which have to do things like supporting small business. Now, small business is not exactly your mom-and-pop grocery store. It can be a multi-million-dollar business, but that's still small these days. Those are where the jobs are created, and that will have the biggest effect on new inventions, new policies, changing the economic direction. Obama has also said he wants to protect education, and that's very important because with the state cutbacks, education has been hit hard across the country and is likely to take very major hits the next couple of years. In places like Illinois, we have a $15 billion deficit. If the income tax increase doesn't pass this week, that's going to become a gaping hole. And it's already affected us at state universities. I've had to fire half my staff.
Oh, my goodness.
I've had to the joke I tell is if Albert Einstein were available to teach calculus as an adjunct professor, I couldn't hire him because I had to choose between keeping a graduate program or having adjunct faculty. Those are the kinds of things that are hitting at the university. It's even worse at many of the elementary and secondary schools. And Obama has been very sensitive that the stimulus package did have education as part of it. I expect to see that again, and I can't imagine the Republicans really fighting that.
Thanks, Dave, for your call. We go to Randy in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Randy.
How are you today?
Okay, how are you?
I'm wonderful. I certainly would like to put my condolences out to the people who were injured this last weekend. I guess what I'm going to say is that first off, I've never seen a weapon kill its people who kill. Timothy McVeigh certainly demonstrated that you don't need a firearm to do destruction to fellow citizens. And the other thing that I would like to point out is that as the disparity between the have and the have-nots, meaning the shift in our monies to fewer and fewer people at the top, and people with less and less at the bottom, I don't see an end to the violence that people are willing to do to our government. Our government is so ineffective. We make trade deals with China, South Korea, and we give big corporations tax breaks, and we're shipping jobs out by the hundreds of thousands and millions a year to foreign countries, and we give tax breaks to the leaders of these corporations who in turn hire lobbyists to bribe our politicians, and I really see no end to that, and I'd like to see what your guest has to say about that today.
I do think the widening gap between the most wealthy and the poorest of our citizens is a serious problem. And it has to be addressed, and it has to be addressed particularly in the global economy. As we manage to be part of the global economy normally increases the gap between the rich and the poor, and we're going to have to find some method of dealing with that, one that unfortunately didn't work in the last Congress, although they came to a compromise, was to eliminate some of the tax cuts for the most wealthy that came in during the Bush administration. But things like that, finding ways in which some of the money from the global economy goes to enriching the other folks who aren't the chief executives of the corporations, is going to have to be done. It is always a balance, and there are arguments on the other side about the need to create wealth, not just tax wealth. Finding that compromise is going to be difficult, but it is going to be important. We need to both figure out our role in the global economy, and we need to figure out how to distribute the wealth of the global economy more equitably than we're doing currently.
Tom in Burlington, hi.
Well, there's so many issues here that come up. My father was a member of Congress from the north side of Chicago, Charles A. Boyle, and he passed the first civil rights bill that it was ever passed since the Civil War. Tillman was a black young man who was killed down in the South. And in 1957, my father put the bill through. And when he was putting it through, he was actually attacked in the cloakroom of the House of Representatives. Another congressman pulled a gun on him and said, "Charlie, if you keep playing your parliamentary tricks, I'm going to shoot you." And I'm not going to tell you who the congressman was, but even in the Congress, a congressman can be accosted by another member. I was a page there. And where I was sitting, there was a group of separatists from Puerto Rico who came in the Congress, I think it was in 1952, and they shot up the House of Representatives. And the holes are still in the wall. You can see where the holes are. But this question of a governor in Pakistan was shot last week, and the whole idea that someone would forget that we're in a state of war, and why couldn't a congresswoman call up the police department saying, I want one policeman to come here, I'm having a public meeting. And then it gets down to this point of the police are controlled by a certain set of rules, and you can't ask them to do anything more than that are in these rules. And that whole question has to be maybe addressed there.
I would invite you, if your father's papers haven't been placed, we would love to have them at the University of Illinois at Chicago in our special collections. I had not heard the particular story you related.
No, I've never heard that either.
So we would love, if you have documentation or if you've done an oral history, it would be important that some of that history not be lost. So I hope that some of his papers and some of your memories have been put somewhere for future historians to work with.
And what about this keeping people safe? What do you think needs to change, if anything, in terms of members of Congress, aldermen, people who are in public service? Do they need some kind of guard at their side when they interact with the public?
Well, the first thing is, and this will obviously upset some of your listeners, but we do have to have stronger gun control laws, particularly for automatic weapons, but even for regular firearms. We need to do the registration. We need to make sure that the people who get the firearms are legitimate citizens who have a legitimate reason for the firearms, and there are a bunch of those. But our firearm laws are not nearly strong enough. Second, yes, there's some occasions where having police available is a good thing. But for instance, if you're campaigning, I'll use the example in Chicago. Every morning when I campaigned for alderman or campaigned for congressman, I would be at a bus stop or an L station or be at grocery stores. You can't have a policeman trailing after every candidate for public office or every public official. Some of the more ones where there are more threats, such as the mayor, yes, that does make sense, just like the president has the Secret Service protecting him. But we're going to have to take the violence out of society. We're not going to be able to shield every public official from the threat if it's everybody can manage to shoot them.
Yeah, what you said is important. We need to take the violence out of this society. We need to do that. All right, we have about 30 seconds. I don't know if we can do this, but we'll try. Janice in Richland Center. Hi.
Hi. I'll try to be very quick. They say that your guest said Mr. Daley is the working class. Well, I think part of the problem, President Obama, him, they're part of the working class. They're not part of the poor. And they don't understand what it's like to be truly poor and to make a choice between a house payment and buying groceries for your kids. They don't understand that. And when the partisanship goes on, I think that will add to the violence, and it really terrifies me that this is going on and that the NRA will not help with any of this.
Thank you very much, and I guess we'll leave the comment at that. Professor Dick Simpson, thank you so much. I hope you'll join us again.
My pleasure.
Our guest this half hour, Professor Dick Simpson. He's head of the Political Science Department at the University of Illinois, Chicago, and was a Chicago politician himself, an alderman for a number of years, also ran for Congress, and we thank him for his time. Thanks also to Mara Liasson from NPR. And thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing the program. Rhonda Fanning has returned. Thanks to Rhonda for on-air production and to you for all of your calls. We are going to talk about how we stop violence in America, the second hour of our program, particularly gun violence. And we'll speak with Washington Post Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter. This is the Ideas Network.